Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And we're coming to you this week from beautiful Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, the Mecca, or some would say Mesopotamia, of tabletop gaming.
Never heard it called that before, but okay, continue.
And why are we in Wisconsin? Why, Gen Con, of course, the largest annual gaming show in North America. For being the largest gaming convention, this thing sure is hard to find. Excuse me, sir. We're looking for the Indianapolis Convention Center. Oh, Indiana. All right, Chris, back to Japan.
All right.
Well, obviously, we'll try again next year.
So will we?
Yes. And as we say at Passover every year at Outer Red Hands, next year in Indianapolis. It is our Jerusalem. Yeah, so yeah, that's going on. And I suspect if it's anything like San Diego Comic-Con, it's just turned into such a commercial beast that it's actually been probably not even fun anymore for people that remember going.
I've never gone from... Actually, I mute the hashtag and stuff because I don't want it clogging up my Twitter feed, but I don't imagine it would be that fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's now gotten so big and you really have to like plan stuff out and fight crowds and...
Right.
I mean, unless there's decent accommodations, which always seems to be a problem. What, there's a lottery system and stuff and you kind of never really know if you're going to get even a room.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know.
So, yeah, that's San Diego's like that too. You end up staying an hour or so outside of the city. So every morning you drive in and instantly the hotels that are all adjacent to the convention center are sold out soon as they announce. Also, the comic book component of the Comic-Con is so small and so kind of segregated into little corner. It's ridiculous.
Well, I imagine that wouldn't be the case with Gen Con in terms of gaming. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully gaming or, you know, role-playing games would be the largest portion of Gen Con, given what it is.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. I hope, like, video games haven't invaded too terribly. And it'd be interesting to see, like, what companies put the big money in there, like, do the giant booths and do, you know, take up the biggest amount of floor space. I'd be curious to see who really kind of tries to dominate or show off things and who
does
it.
I don't think it was WotC.
Last
year, because I remember last year or the year before, people talking about how there was not much of a D&D presence at Gen Con. Or maybe I'm just making that up.
Mm-hmm. I would hope that unlike big Comic Cons, the independents don't get kind of hidden and buried. Mm. Yeah, the small press section was always really good. Always a lot of, you know, interesting creators and interesting talents. And they were
in the
fewer and fewer tables at all times. And people just basically use that to like sit, an area to sit and rest.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's like, hey, buddy, I'm trying to sell stuff here. Just could you move out of my booth?
Right. Put a drink on your table. But I'm just going to, you know, it was ridiculous.
Wow.
How was your gaming week?
Non-existent, because unfortunately, one player showed up for the sprawl game that I was supposed to run at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, it's tough not to feel a little bit salty, especially when it seems like the D&D one-shots are usually maxed out. We're also in Japan. I mean, we have a lot of, you know, expats or ALTs, assistant language teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's summer.
Yes.
School's not in summer, so summer tends to be the time when a lot of people say, well, okay, I finished my contract, I'm going home,
mm-hmm.
or it's before they arrive. So even the board game convention, the JIG board game days, usually see a slump in attendance around this time. So I'm hoping that was just it. and I'm also hoping it doesn't happen next month because I'm going to try and run that Alien cinematic starter game.
Nice.
And I've ordered swag in terms of custom dice and a t-shirt. So I'll be real miffed if no one shows up.
Yes. I can imagine. Yeah. Well, good luck. I can't wait to hear how that goes. We're filming kind of individual interviews to do a campaign confessions for Alien. And a couple of things have come up that have been kind of interesting. So last night, just hearing Lyle's feedback on things, one thing that keeps coming up is the stress mechanic is not supporting role play or really giving you good ideas about what you would do during role play. I thought something interesting, instead of saying, oh, you rolled a 6, that's a twitch or that's a tremor, is to roll results and then give the player a card that said, mechanically, this is what would happen, and play that however you want, but give some kind of physical, you know, some kind of performance reaction to how you're dealing with that.
How would that be different than rolling on the table then? Because
it's not different, but it's kind of hidden information. So instead of saying, I'm twitching, you know, you actually have some kind of reaction. And if you aren't comfortable with the twitch, mechanically, you know how it happens. It kind of keeps you in the session and you're not coming. I just felt like that when we were getting those results, it's okay, now I have a twitch, now I did this, now I did this. To be able to fit it into the role play, fit it into what you were doing, fit it into how you failed, might work a little bit better.
Maybe. Sure. At the end of the day, pretty much everything in a role-playing game is just numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you kind of act you're not going to get that much out of it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, having this discussion before with people about, especially in terms of like a dungeon world and not having damage be a number, I mean, eventually at the end of the day, you have to say, okay, you got hit in the arm and it's, you know, dangled, whatever. You got as much description as you want, you still have to say you take 12 hit points or whatever, you know, otherwise it's not going to come across. And I think this might be the same thing where I didn't think that the table of results, which I didn't look at all of them, I only looked at the results I rolled, and there weren't that many. I don't think that table of results kind of pulled me out any more or less than being handed a card with those mechanical effects would. And for some of the effects that affect other players or player characters at the table, you're still going to have to say, oh, and this happens to all the rest of you.
Oh, right.
Which, I mean, you're not going to try and cheat and reverse engineer what it was, but everyone's going to know, oh, that's that twitch that gave everyone else a stress. So I don't know. I'm not against it. I don't think it would affect at least the way I played all that much.
Yeah, it just seemed like when we were saying, oh, that's a four or that's a, so it's just roll the dice. And so maybe not giving the players that table.
Okay.
Just roll the dice. Okay, tell me your result. And then I hand you the card that's that, that's that result. It has mechanically what happens. So you, you know, record that or just keep that card until you get rid of that stress. And then you can do something and say, okay, everybody take a point of stress, you know, as a character, because you see, I just freaked out.
Okay, that actually, that that would be interesting. I mean, it would be a little more bookkeeping for the GM, because one of the upsides of having the open role is everyone at the table could kind of look, or everyone at the physical table could look at the table printed on the sheet and go, okay, this was the effect. We all kind of know what happened, and it allowed the other, the players to remind each other of stuff. Not that you necessarily needed it, but being handed a card, I mean, the player's not going to cheat ideally, but the GM is going to have to then remember what card did I give you. However, I do kind of like that hidden surprise of the players not having the table and then just, what'd you roll? Here you go. I wonder if it would kind of lose its appeal a little bit quickly.
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah, it was just, it's something that occurred to me. It's like that would serve the role playing more, because to kind of keep and hide a little bit more information. So you're just, why are you doing that? And also because both with the critical injury table and the stress table, which you roll for your panic rolls, we were looking at it and kind of getting what happened and then the mechanical effect of that. And it might be better to just say, here's the mechanical effect and kind of come up with what that would, you know, how you want to represent that in that situation with that character. Because some of the stuff just didn't, either on the injury table didn't work anatomically, it didn't work like physically, like, oh, you hurt your leg, but you're being pulled by your arm. Like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, you got speared through the shoulder, but you fell and shattered your kneecap. Okay.
Right. So a lot of that stuff was a little odd. It's like, okay, this is going to affect your mobility. Let's figure out how that would have happened in the combat. Because you don't always get critical injuries until like further in combat. So you've already described physically what's happening, and then you say, oh, but that happened to your hand. I don't know how your hand was involved, but that was the thing we've been talking back and forth about. Those tables might be better kind of reversed. Okay, we know what the mechanics are, and let's figure out
how
that
works. Or maybe just make them only mechanical.
Yeah,
and then you can figure out kind of what flavoring gets wrapped around them.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of the thought. And then my cards were an extension of that idea. It's just like, then they'll let the player even more like customize that to how they want their character to be
doing.
That would
be pretty cool.
Yeah. For me, the only thing that happened was we tried it was only about an hour session, but we did the Infinity Roleplay.
Oh, cool.
Just a little, so it's the 2D20 system and just a little starter, like we're on our way to the actual location, to the actual planet where the campaign takes place. And it was fun. I'd had a few roles and kind of just felt things out. And what I realized is Infinity is a big world with a lot of details and a lot of stuff. And just like when we're playing Starfinder, if you don't have some of that stuff in your head.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when the GM asks you stuff, you're just like, I don't know. What would I do? Who do I like, or who am I aligned with?
Right.
And so there's a lot of reading and a lot of backstory that's kind of necessary to really get your character to fit into things. And you can treat it kind of generically, but if you really want to immerse yourself and enjoy the flavor of the setting, you need to do a little bit of extra reading. And also that's a lot of extra work for the GM to kind of say, you wouldn't like this guy, or you would have this opinion about this, or you would have this attitude.
Do you think that's kind of the GM's job, or one of the GM's responsibilities in a lore-heavy setting then?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's up to if the GM likes that and they you know really want to immerse you in that world. Otherwise, I think it's kind of up to how they want to set that tone. I don't think it's their responsibility, but depending on what the group is looking for, I think sometimes being very lore heavy is nice. I mean, Jackson does a nice job of really immersing us in Starfinder, but at the same time, stuff you're not really interested in, like when you did the Death Watch, you could kind of just give people, okay, generally this is what you are, just kind of roll with it, this is what happens, and they don't have to know any real details of the universe. So you can give people kind of a generic understanding of you're a super soldier and this is your mission, and not you're serving the Emperor, of course.
Well, I was thinking of that Death Watch game, too, because apart from you and myself, pretty much no one else knew the setting.
Right, right.
And I was trying to write those sheets and present the game in a way that people could still play mm-hmm. without having me having to go on like an hour-long description of this 30-year-old plus game setting that is horrible and terrible. You know, in far future, there's only war.
Right.
And yeah, so my goal was to make that as accessible as possible. Mm-hmm. And watching the video again, I still think I spent a bit too much time at the beginning. I was also explaining the system. Mm-hmm. Based on that, I kind of feel that's one of the GM's responsibilities or mm-hmm. something the GM should do mm-hmm. if you're doing a lore heavy setting where it's going to be like, give, just like teaching mechanics, and I had this discussion on Twitter. If you're teaching the mechanics of a game, mm-hmm. you have to give the players enough information for them to make an informed decision without overwhelming them. Mm-hmm. And I think the same goes for setting mm-hmm. or background stuff. You have to give the players who wouldn't otherwise know enough information for them to make an informed decision about what's going on in the game world. But then it's a real fine balance between not spending hours going into like minutia and background stuff, just like high level stuff so that people can make a decision and keep going, or as a GM be ready to kind of roll with whatever the players say, and as a player just know that you're going to have to make a snap decision and then maybe go with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like what you said about informed decisions. I think that's important for the players to enjoy playing their characters. And that was something the Alien RPG, we were playing an IP and people kind of have seen those movies, but what does a roughneck really do? Like, what is their routine? Like, all you see is them complaining about their money and drinking coffee.
Exploring weird, creepy ships.
So this would be your daily routine. Yeah, that kind of stuff, I think, would help you guys kind of lay out like how you wanted to start that session. Yeah. Mm. So I think that's, informed choices, I think, are much better than just kind of,
I wonder if that's going to be fleshed out more when the Alien RPG book comes out. Because I think it said they're going to give you information on how to run the campaign mode for Marines, Roughnecks,
colonists
and colonists. Right. So I would imagine there's going to be more background stuff about what all those kind of jobs entail and kind of what the campaigns are.
And I think in character creation too, you're going to have a more detailed result. Like when you create a character, there's going to be more information about what you're specializing in, kind of what your role would be. Because they just did, especially with gear and things, they just touched on things and ships. Here's ships somebody pilots it and there's a captain. In that beginning information, they didn't go too far into it.
I'm kind of laughing because that gear section and that I'm like, that's all I need. That was fine. That section's fine. Like, you don't have to expand on that anymore because actually, like, massive gear sections kind of turn me off a little bit.
Right.
Which maybe I mentioned it last time. I picked up Red Markets, the drive-through RPG deal of the day a while back. It's supposedly economic horror during a zombie apocalypse. Someone described it online as a poverty simulator. I had to check, and I'm like, oh, and they meant it in a positive way.
Right.
Where supposedly in that game, the horror is you're almost locked into this debt cycle of having to go out into the wasteland to scrounge for stuff to bring back to the communities. Mm-hmm. And they do that mechanically by basically giving everything a charge, kind of like the Alien RPG, where even swinging an axe, you're marking off charges that represent how many calories you have to consume to do it, like wear and tear on the axe and all the stuff. And I'm like, okay, that sounds cool. I got to the gear section. I don't know how many pages it is.
Yeah.
And because that's how the game works, every piece of gear down to like, not clothing, I'm exaggerating a little bit, has to be detailed with how many charges it has, what it costs, all these upgrades. And I got to that and I'm like, you know what? I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea. Mm-hmm. That is too mechanically involved for types of games I like.
Yeah, and I think anything that revolves around economies, if you want to do detailed economics, that's just going to be so much bookkeeping. Yeah. Interesting approach, though.
I really like the approach, and I really appreciate that it is economic horror, and like that's the thing you're fighting against, as opposed to so many other battle against the wasteland thing. And I'm like, there's no survival here. It's just you're just going out and shooting mutants and stuff like that. Where this is like, there's actually a reason to go out and collect the stuff and make sure you have enough charges. And it looks like it would be those really tense situations of, do I want to use this now?
Yes.
Or do I want to hold on to it?
Mm. That's cool. I saw the Ore Report was released, and this was just something that somebody posted on a Tumblr page, but it was kind of...
Tumblr still around?
Yeah, I know.
Actually, that porn purge? Really?
Well, that's why they just have...
That's the only thing it's on there now. Yeah.
Right. It's a collection tracking of what is actually happening using a Roll20 account.
Okay.
So they were looking at, when you create a Roll20 account, you can kind of specify, this is the system that I play. And then also when you make a campaign, this is the game we're playing in the campaign.
Okay.
And so they're just basically looking at those choices. And of course, across the board in both categories, 5e was
the dominant. Yeah, this is my shocked face. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But the interesting thing is it actually went over, I think last year it was 49%. Now it's almost 52% is 5e. So the system that campaigns are being played, and also for accounts, it's almost 55%. So it's getting a pretty significant majority. Second place, though, is uncategorized.
Oh.
And that's like, so people say, oh, there that's where all the indies are. That's where people are playing what they want to play. And it very well could be, but it also means that you customize the character sheet for 5e, or you're doing a little homebrew. Yeah, it means anything that you don't want to declare it as a as official 5e rules, where you want to do something different. So that would mean, you know, doing any system that's not 5e, that and also that isn't on their pull down,
right?
And then, or doing your own kind of customized version. So there could still be some 5e in
there. I'm sure. But I mean, in that case, if you feel the game has diverged enough from 5e to call it uncategorized, I mean, you're not going to like make a tiny change say, oh, this isn't 5e anymore.
That's true. But interesting, this year, coming behind uncategorized in the accounts was, of course, Pathfinder. So basically, the two big fantasy systems, you know, are pretty much dominating what people are playing in Roll20. But right behind that, in both campaigns and accounts, is Call of Cthulhu.
Really? You know what? I sounded surprised. I'm not, because once you get out of D&D, I think that's probably the next most well-known RPG.
Yeah, and I think just, I remember at the hobby store when I was a kid, just seeing that constantly, like the early versions of that were just, it was always there, it was always in print, it was always around. And I was,
does that mean someone never picked it up because the book was always there?
Never played it, never got involved, but because you're too busy playing superheroes and fantasy and
it's a very different sci-fi. Change,
yeah, it's very interesting that it's always been present and now it's actually building in popularity.
We're up to what, like 7th edition?
I think 8th edition, yeah,
I think I had 4th or 3rd. Never played it, just kind of read through it.
But the other interesting difference is, compared to Pathfinder and 5e, the Call of Cthulhu sessions are, the amount of playtime is actually much, much shorter. Hmm. And I don't know if that would be because that's what people want from those sessions, like they want shorter, more satisfying, or that things go sideways much faster in a Call of Cthulhu campaign. But we're talking about 11.9-hour sessions compared to a 40-hour average session for campaigns, like the amount of time people spend in campaigns.
Oh, total. Okay, yeah, total. Okay. You're like, session? I'm like, 40-hour sessions? Really? What are these people doing? Like marathoning D&D for 2 days straight?
They could be.
I'm sure people are. Yeah.
An interesting difference, and they don't know quite what that is, if it's a mechanical thing or it's just a preference thing, like there's only so much cosmic horror you can take
That might be true. Yeah, you're just like, okay, done. Right, like, or like, or maybe because it's more investigative. Yeah, you're investigative, that's the word I'm looking for. You play investigators, that's the one I was going for,
right?
In Call of Cthulhu, maybe is there more prep, more points where the GM has to say, okay, well, that's it, because I didn't prepare any more clues or whatever, so see you next week.
Right. No, that's a good possibility, too. Yeah, and so this suggested a future topic, which actually Lyle posted something this, so I'm kind of stealing this from him as well.
I'm sure you hear about it.
Call of Cthulhu is the number one tabletop RPG in Japan.
Oh, didn't know that.
And it's very bizarre because they showed, the article showed covers of, you know, kind of the supplements and the adventures. And
I can imagine what they look
like. Yeah, very just, you know, manga, like very cutie, you know, sweet-faced characters, and it's like, this is cosmic horror, but yeah, it's very Japan, but they've embraced it, like, I guess pretty deeply, and maybe it just works better. I
saw some old D&D books that, you know, Japanese language, and the cover, at least, yeah, looked like fantasy manga, where I'm like, oh, that's D&D 4E, except the elf looks the way you would expect and everything, and and there's, you know, the hero who looked like they're fresh out of high school, still in high school. But yeah, I've also seen some Call of Cthulhu Japanese covers where I'm just like, that should really be behind like a 18 plus screen, come on.
Right. Yeah, so I'm curious why that fits so much better, and maybe the problem solving or the style of horror is more compatible with kind of Japanese culture, because you can kind of yokai it up a little bit more in Cthulhu than you can in D&D, and there's not horror isn't as compatible because you're just swinging a broadsword and you're not afraid of anything.
The difference there is, okay, maybe it's horrible, but you're able to fight it with a sword, as opposed to like horror where you're just like time to get foe.
And it would be interesting to actually take a look at different countries, like what is the popular system, what's the popular just across culturally, like worldwide, what people like. As far as Kickstarters, I wanted to bring up a 5e open license setting and rulebook for Casarda. So Casarda is by Isola Ilion Edizioni, an Italian, as you can tell from my wonderful pronunciation, an Italian producer that is going to publish worldwide in both English and Italian a 5e setting that is a world of dark danger and horror. You deal with chaos and insanity and damnation with deadly enemies and frightening monsters. So each player in this game will impersonate the soul of a dead person that's awoken in a tomb near this mysterious city of Limbo. So your souls fight to track down cultist conspiracies and uncover ancient secrets hidden among these forgotten ruins. The interesting part of this game is that they give you new races that you can play. So you can just roll a traditional 5e character and then play as their soul, or they give you the three new races of the Disembodied, the Fetish, and the Sons of Limbo. So those are, they have different powers and different abilities that kind of embed them more in the world of Casarda. And it looks like a very interesting setting. Of course, it's Italian, so gorgeous art. So I think there's about 20 more days on this Kickstarter. So have a look at that and see if we can get these guys funded. Looks like a very ambitious and very dark and interesting project. It's a nice take on fantasy that's not grimdark. It's just dark, dark. I mean, basically you're in limbo, saving the souls of your characters. So check that out, and we'll put a link in the description. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, and slowly on Facebook. Twitter, I'm at HiveMind, HYVEMYND. Yeah, I guess follow me there if you want to see a lot of stuff that's not related to RPGs, and also TTRPG stuff sprinkled in. I also have a Patreon account for making Fate fantasy-themed resources, and that's at FAE_fantasy on Twitter. And it's also Fantastic Fate Resources, both the blog and the Patreon account.
Oh, nice. And I'll put in a little shameless plug for my cartoon as well. I haven't done that for quite a few episodes, but abusecartoons.com is my weekly gag cartoon. And I do a live stream every week. It's Monday here, so that'd be Sunday night, kind of North American time. And that's abusecartoons.com, and then abusecartoons on either YouTube or Twitch, and at abusecartoons on Twitter. And you can find Idle Red Hands at idleredhands.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. And of course, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/idleredhands. And that'll let you get involved in the podcast, get access to behind the scenes, things you haven't heard before, and also tell us kind of what you want to hear and what games you want to hear us talk about. All right. And hopefully soon we'll record your confessions for the Alien RPG, and we'll get that up so people can see kind of everyone's reaction to what we went through. So you have actual play sessions and then a reaction. So hopefully we should make a giant super cut of an 8-hour with a cut in.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Popping everybody's opinion. So we will see you again next week. Bye.
Bye.
The sounds